Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, April 8th, 2014. We're going to get started right away today with the market report, as our guest today, David Krieger, will be joining us shortly thereafter. As soon as I get confirmation that he is on, so let's get right to the gold prices today. Had a nice day in gold, up $11.50 at $1,309.40. So we're finally made it back up over 20, up 14 cents at $20.11. Platinum was up 15 at $14.45, along with palladium up 10 at $778. The USDX today took a beating today on the dollar, down 46.46 at 79.76, broke down under 80 once again, with crude oil up over $2 today at 102.55. The paper markets today, they kind of broke their three-session losing streak on the markets today, but not a big rally. They were down on the day with the Dow only up 10 points at 16,256. I wouldn't call that a rally of any sort. The NASDAQ was up 33, still under 1% at 41.12, and the S&P up 7 at 18.51. And the yield on the 10-year was down 0.01 at 2.68%. We're going to get right to our guest today. I'm going to say good afternoon, Al, but Al still has his bronchitis.
Yeah, well, I can talk part of the time. Yeah, just once in a while I start coughing while I'm... Don't get too close to the earphones or to your radios, because I don't want to communicate this to anybody by coughing into the microphone.
Here, I thought I was going to be able to get a word in today.
Uh-huh.
Even with Brian. All right. So we'll let you have your day. Anyway, thank you, Al, for joining us, because I know how difficult it is to do these programs when you are under the weather with bronchitis, and it's very difficult. So thank you for showing up.
It's even harder to do them while you're drunk. That's one of the things I've noticed, Melody. But
oh, I found that much
bronchitis.
I found it much easier to do it.
Well, maybe
I've never counted five. I don't drink and do these programs. I don't drink anyway, but Anyway, we better get off that topic before I get myself into more trouble. And I'd like to welcome David Krieger, owner of Hobson NBT. David is one of my suppliers for U.S. Gold, and he's been on the program several times before, and we certainly get a wonderful response from the listeners when we have him on the program. He brings up, you know, just truth and honesty, which is what we try to do when it comes to the coin market. Good afternoon, David.
Hi, Melody. Hi, Al. Sorry you're feeling not so good.
Well, I'm not feeling bad. I just can't. I'm working on my impersonation of Henry Kissinger.
I've got my Lysol. I'm spraying. I have my Lysol, yeah. And I'm spraying down my microphone regularly.
Good thing. Good idea. Good idea. So I understand that you are impressed by one of the recent coin shows in Baltimore.
Well, yeah. You know, there are. Well, I don't think so. I'm not sure if your listeners know this, but throughout the country, there are three coin shows in Baltimore per year, three in Long Beach, one in the Midwest, and the American Numismatic Association show, which varies throughout the country. And these are all big deals. And it certainly is an indicator of the strength of the market for precious metals. At the shows, they sell bullion. They sell paper money. They sell oddities. You can go there and, for instance, buy dollar bills that have 8 or 9 of the same digits on it. That's always kind of fun if anybody knows about liar's poker. You know, that's where you get a dollar bill that's got all 7s on it, and you know, it's kind of fun. But it also is where I think the truth of the market is established, because the dealers that are there, there's 200 to 300 at a time, sometimes more. In Florida, in the first week of January, there's usually closer to the 600 dealers. And when you go to these shows, you can tell by the amount of buying activity what the market is all about. And Baltimore finished last week. Actually, it was the 30th of March, so that was Sunday. And it was very strong. There a lot of interest out there, and people came away very enthused. And sometimes I'm not sure you really hear about that. There's not a whole lot of publicity that's given to it. They cover it on a local news, but not too much in business channels or anything else. But it's a lot of fun to go to them. I've done it for a number of years, and I always find it very helpful to know the strength of the market or the weakness of the market in some cases.
So you're telling us that the coin show is a kind of leading indicator for what's likely to happen in the gold market. I won't, you know, how reliable? 60%, 70%, 80%? How reliable do you suppose that indicator might be?
Well, I would guess that it's probably well over 70%, 75%. I mean, really what you have are dealers that get together. They trade among themselves for the first 2 days. They establish what I think are very current prices. Those prices are carried into the wholesale market. And guys like me who work in the wholesale business pay a lot of attention to that.
What do you mean by dealers who trade among themselves? It sounds a little surprising to the average person. If you're a dealer, you come in and you've got your set of coins that you're going to have for sale and instead for the first 2 days, dealers are trading among themselves.
Well, let's take it back to the kind of the basics. Rare coins is a general term that I use to describe any American United States minted coin prior to 1933. That's the focus of my business, in rare coins. Bullion is an entirely different subject, and I won't talk about that right now, because bullion is, you know, common. It's produced by the mint all the time. You know, it's an entirely horse of a different color, if you will. So we're talking about United States gold coins prior to 1933. And what happens is they're not made anymore. That's why they're rare. So one dealer may have a coin that another dealer needs for one of his customers. So they go to the show and they all come with want lists And the want list, they try to fill those requirements from their customers, and that's why the trading goes on between the dealers. And the majority of that trade it goes during the first 2 days. So it isn't anything nefarious at all. It's a matter of competing for a coin that you can't find any other place except for the dealer that happens to be in Baltimore at the table, and he has one, and I need to go get that coin.
You know what I find interesting, David, is the venue where I advertise and everything, people, you hear my competitors talk about purchasing gold, of course, as a store of value to protect against the economic problems that we face. And I discuss this with my clients all the time. Uh-huh. And what is rarely discussed is, and it's true, and I'm glad you brought this up today, are the coin shows. There is another world out there in the gold business, and it's a very active market. And I think it's interesting to bring this to the listeners and to explain how they work. And you don't hear that, and you're right, it's not discussed anywhere.
Yes.
I was curious, David, when you go to the coin show, do you go as a participant in the sense that you have your own booth set up there for Hobson NDT, or do you just go as a fan and walk around, see what's going on?
It depends on the show. In the past, I went many times over a period of years where a table was set up, coins were brought in by Brinks, and we sold coins from behind the table. But it was a very rare thing. It was really the only time that I interacted with the public, so to speak. I'm just one of those guys who really enjoys dealing with other dealers. And I guess because I'm not focused on, having a storefront or anything else, I just kind of enjoy making trades mm-hmm. with other dealers. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I've set up tables, but when I go now, I'll cooperate with another dealer and I'll just kind of use that table to make purchases sell to other dealers and not so much interface with the public.
You know, you raised a big issue, an important issue, when you talk about the coins are being delivered with a Brinks truck. Now, what kind of security do you have in those facilities?
Well, it's really funny. At the end of the afternoon, you have a series of tables. They're usually just folding tables, 6 foot standard folding tables with little cases on them that you raise the top on, and it has a little key on it and a thing to keep the coins in there. I know in the past I told you about the $5.5 million $20 ultra high relief that was shown in one of those cases, and when the show was adjourning for the night, usually around 7 o'clock. All we did was take a black cloth, put it over the top of that case, put a folding chair on top of it, and walk out. But during the show, there is so much security. There is there is probably close to $300 million worth of coins on the floor at any one time. And so you have video surveillance. You have unmarked people, armed security walking there. You have public display of law enforcement, usually the local counties. And at night, everybody has to be out of the floor, usually by 7 p.m., and that's when the dogs come in. And I guarantee you, nobody is going to find anything in there. So, and the losses are almost none.
Yeah, I'd have to suppose that has to be a very secure facility. I had never thought about that before, but I could imagine. And I've never seen pictures of coin shows where we have – I've never attended one.
Oh, you're missing out. It's actually a lot of fun.
It may be. Perhaps next time, if they have one in Dallas, maybe I'll go. But still, the pictures I've seen, I've never noticed. They may be there, but I've never noticed that there was an overt police presence there. I suppose there is. I suppose there's some officers that are walking around in uniform, but I'd bet there's a bunch of plain people that are undercover, and they're just walking around and keeping their eyes peeled.
That's actually the majority of it. That really is the majority of it. You have the public in, you have the Boy Scouts in. The Boy Scouts all get coin collecting merit badges or whatever, and so the dealers are helpful and they talk. But you don't want to have an overwhelming police overt presence there because it's kind of intimidating. So it's the majority of it is plain clothes. But what's fun about it is you go in there and the dealers hold you very accountable. I mean they're trying to buy at the lowest possible rate, and it's complete capitalism at its finest point. I mean really what you're doing is buying and selling money, and it's there's nothing more pure of capitalism I think than that.
What about the word of the dealers? I know in the jewelry business, when one jeweler does business with another one, their word is accepted, at least historically. They have a very high level of ethics and integrity within the jewelry community, or at least that's what I've been led to believe by one jeweler I talked to.
Well, I don't know the jewelry business
like that,
at all.
Does that exist where you can do business on a handshake? And your word, and you say, okay, here comes I'll be sending that $50,000 coin over to you later this afternoon, shake hands, and that's it?
I've done a $1 million deal several times just on a word. I think in 14 years or so I've done business with Melody, it's always been by word.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a case of mutual trust, and only one time I sold a coin for $464,000 one time, and in order to deliver it, I got on an airplane late at night, flew down to a place in Texas, got on a rental car, drove it over to a coin shop, and the guy looked at it and he said, "Oh, that's a really nice coin. It's too bad I can't buy it." Now, that's the first time that ever happened to me. So I put it in my pocket. I got back in a rental car, went back, and flew back to, it happened to be in Fort Worth. And when I got back, I put the word out to other dealers of what happened. Within 24 hours, there was a bank wire in for that coin because the guy knew that he would never buy another coin unless he made that deal good.
Yeah.
So that gotta be. I think that's the way it goes.
It works the same way with my clients. I mean, everything is done by a phone call, and it's a verbal contract. I'll lock in the prices. The product is here waiting for them, and they send their funds. And very rarely do I ever have a trade go bad. And I have done $1 million trades like that. So
yes.
It is, and again, it's about building relationships, and that's what.
Yeah.
It was important, but it's just like buying shares. But it's once the prices are locked in, it's good.
That's right.
It's got to be a little bit, might be cause for anxiety. If you walk into a store with a coin worth most of $500,000 and somebody says, "Sorry, I can't buy it." I mean,
well,
I always assume that you've got to do a little thinking as you walk out the door to see, is anybody watching me right now? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
True or false?
Well, it is, but I'm fully insured by Lloyd's of London, to carry a lot, and handle a lot, mail a lot. So that's really kind of a secondary concern. You
not a big
worry
concern.
A little bit about your immediate physical safety, but I didn't have any of that problem. It was a small town in Texas, and I felt okay about it.
All right, we're going to take a break for some commercial announcements. We will be back with David Krieger, Melody Cederson, and myself, Alfred Addis, in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and our guest is David Krieger from Hobson NDT. David is a wholesaler of precious coins and particularly collectibles, and we are discussing the market, what has been observed. We're talking about Coin Show in Baltimore that did well and implies that the market is being restored. And part of the reason that's interesting, I know a man in Dallas who is a dealer. And he's been a dealer, I'll bet you 35 years, maybe more. And I'll bet you that this guy, I will bet you that this guy owns at least a ton of gold. And I'll bet he might own more than a ton. But he's cash poor. Because he has, for the last year or so, he just hasn't had enough money coming through the door where people are buying. The business has been down, and as a result, it's been slow for him, and he's got a cash flow problem. Well, this is, if your report from the Coin Show in Baltimore is valid, it should be music to his ears, because it should imply that business is about to pick up. What do you think it'll have? What difference will that make in prices? Do you see a significant increase in the price of collectibles in the next 90 days?
No.
Okay.
See, what I do is I track on the wholesale market a selection of coins. And I've been in the business long enough to know that there is no magic breakthrough and all of a sudden everything's going to go rising up and and we're all going to be jumping up and down. That is not the way it works. The coin market has two of number, but to me the more important ones are the spot price of gold or silver, in the case of silver dollars, and bullion, of course, but also the premium. Now the premium reflects and when you buy bullion, you add a percentage onto the cost of bullion, and that's the price you pay, and it's pretty straightforward. Well, in the collectible coins, the certified coins, it's very similar to that. And what I do is I track the spot value of gold and relate that to the melt value of a particular coin. And then for the last 10 years, I have data that is on the wholesale market as to what those coins are actually selling for. That's reflected also, there's a direct relationship to the retail market in there. And sometimes gold can be down, but premiums up. And it would not be a good time to be buying a particular coin, for instance, if the gold is down, the premium's up, and the percentage you're paying over a melt is very high. So what I do is I try to make recommendations to my customers based on the data that comes in as to what would be a good time to buy a particular grade and a particular type of coin. And, it's something that gets down in the weeds. You're a little nerdy doing it. Something that not many of your listeners, Melody, have much interest in. But, for instance, I noticed in doing some of these calculations earlier this week, yesterday, was that the 6310 libs, for instance, have risen in 30 days $110 per coin, and that the percentage over melt is high. So I wouldn't recommend at this point going into 10 libs and 63. On the other hand, there are other coins that have gone down temporarily, and so I compare the percentage they're paying over melt against the historic high and low, and I make a value judgment as to, hey, is this a good time to get into it, accumulate some gold, and then pay attention to where these things are so that later I can sell them back at a profit and reallocate to a different product with the end game of trying to accumulate the majority of gold or more gold. And I think that's something that takes a little effort, but it's a guy like me who has access to all these sheets and a fair computer program to be able to do it. So I don't know if I'm answering that question right, but there is no direct way.
Let me say something there, David. I do something along the same lines, maybe not in detail into like the $10, 63 liberties or some of the fractional pieces and higher grades. However, I do a comparison with the popular items that people purchase and always give recommendations on, is one kind of underperforming over another to where they can get some savings. But what I find interesting about what you do with your comparisons that you do, and this is something that I think the market of pre-33 coins is sadly misrepresented, is you can buy, you can trade, and you can make a profit and increase your holdings of gold overall.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
Very few of my competitors will do what you and I do to help our clients. They'll just sell whatever they can sell, whenever they can sell it, at whatever price they can sell it at. And it brings a negative outlook to the pre-33 coins, which is false.
Well, I have something to say about it. I don't know if it's very accurate or not, but I sell bullion and I sell certified coins and so on. So I have an opinion based on both. Sometimes I think that people concentrate on bullion because it's a fairly easy sell. It's fairly easy to get. It's fairly easy to sell. It's pretty straightforward, and there's no doubt they're beautiful coins. But there's nothing. It's like going down and buying the same thing. It's just it's what it is. It's a gold minted coin out of the mint, and you're missing really the history of the coins. Now, not everybody's interested in having historic coins. Some people buy stocks, some people buy ETFs, some people buy real estate, some people buy land. But the smart people, to me, spread out and they know a little bit about and hold a little bit of everything. They're diversified. So one of the things that I think is important, and today I think you're going to offer up some five libs. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. But
no,
I've been looking at these five libs for a long time in 63. And the reason is that the high that happened on January 6th, 2005, the percentage over melt for a coin on January 6th, 2005 was 533.86%. That means that was very strong demand. The coins were, you know, think about that for a while. Now they're selling someplace around 80% to 82% over melt. The potential gain of this is premiums and telemarketers and demand in the market comes. There's a huge potential that coin may come back again. And I think it fits in just what you said. I don't know that it's going to happen. I can't guarantee it's going to happen, but I can see the history where it did happen, and this would, to me, be a nice time to buy it and see what happens. You always have, you know, you have an original pre-1933 coin, the ones that, you know, are in brand-new holders, they're beautiful coins, dated 1881 to sometime in 1908. We kind of choose the dates. I choose the best ones around. But that's the kind of thing that I think makes sense to people. When they're looking at it and saying, gee, you know, I'll hold these a couple of years and see what happens. Maybe it'll go up 200% over melt. And you can't go wrong on something like that, Melody.
Right. No, you can't. And again, it's buying the coins right. And I'm sad to say there's very few folks out there who sell them right and understand and do the comparisons that we do.
Can I say one other thing on that? Just to say it and get it out there, I also think that a lot of people are a little bit gun shy of selling certified coins. You and I have a relationship, and you know that you know I hand select for you and go. And I think you've been happy for a long time. A lot of people don't have that access, and so they're a little uncomfortable selling a coin because they don't know what that wholesaler is going to sell them. And it's an uncomfortable thing. That's why Hobson is kind of a well-regarded company. I send good stuff, and you get good stuff, and your customers get good stuff. And that takes a lot of the mystery out of it. There's a lot more confidence that, you know, that goes along with that when you have a relationship like you and I do.
Exactly. And you know, when I talk a little more on my competitors and even product that I receive, I go through. And if it's something that I don't like, I reject it and send it back. There's just like
absolutely.
When we do 90% silver, we go through our 90% silver. I pull out tons of product that I wouldn't send to my clients, and we just send it back. And so it's very important, and it's rare. I hate to say it, but it is rare. But we do. I love the $5 Liberty gold piece. I usually sell them in an AU condition.
Mm-hmm.
But you offered me a deal I couldn't resist. And these are on the Mint State 63 $5 Liberty gold pieces. It's a great price for them. Even in comparison to the $5 Liberties, we ran a special on AU $5 Liberties last month, and it was a tremendous success. And now we have the Mint State 63, so you're moving up four grades. Mint State 63 $5 Liberty gold pieces for $625, but you will also receive in that $625 a 1 ounce silver eagle. So you can buy 1, 10, or 20 of these coins or more, but you have to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And is this true that during the Civil War there was such gold hoarding that they reduced the mintage of these coins? And that's one of the reasons why the $5 Liberty pieces are particularly rare.
Well, there's two varieties of the $5 Liberty. This is a wonderful coin. It was designed by Christian Goldbrick. He was the director of the Mint. He was called the chief engraver of the Mint from 1840 to 1844. And the first version of the $5 Liberty came out in 1839. And it's called a Variety 1. And the reason it's called a Variety 1 is on the reverse, over the eagle, it's blank. In 1866, the year after the Civil War, there was a motto added to the top over the eagle, which said, "In God We Trust." It's called a Variety 2 with motto. And so the ones that you're offering up are Variety 2s, and they are exactly the same as designed by Gobrick in the around 1840 when he was the designer. I guess he's actually earlier than that. He took over the chief engraver in 1840. But it's a beautiful coin, and during 1863 to 65, the mintage in 63 was less than 2,500 coins, except for the San Francisco Mint, which made about 17,000. The 64 was 4,000, and 1865 was a very, very small mintage of 1,270 coins, except for San Francisco, who ran off 27,000 of them. So you're right in relation to that, that it was a little short.
Now, the thing about it is these collectible coins are going to necessarily gain value over time. If the population is increasing, it just stands to reason that the collectible coins, there will be fewer of these because the actual number isn't going to diminish, but there will be fewer coins in relation to the population on a coin per however many people. You're going to have to presume that it's going to become increasingly rare and therefore increasingly valuable. You know, this is one of those things where this isn't necessarily rocket science. It's just a question of taking a little more of a long-term view than just deciding I want to make an investment today that I can cash in on a high-speed trading a couple of milliseconds from now and make a few pennies on each of 1,000, 100,000 shares of stock. Or, you've got to take a little longer view, but it's almost a no-lose situation. And in fact, most of the people listening to the program have an idea of what the prices have been of bullion coins. We understand that gold's been a certain price during, several decades, and we have a rough idea to follow that. What about the prices of collectible pre-1933 coins? I'm going to guess that you have followed them to some degree since 1933. You've probably gone back to that point and sit back and watched. How volatile have those prices been? Have they been generally trend upward throughout the entire period, or is it volatile in the same sense that the bullion coin has been volatile?
Well, during the 40s and the 50s, of course, prices were much, 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 much lower. And so if you're asking me the trend from, the 40s, 50s on up, mm-hmm. Yes, it's been a straight appreciation. If hey, how do you like that? If you
better than my coughing.
It's my son calling me on my cell phone. I forgot to turn it off. So, but if you look at the last 30 years, well, it varies, and again, it varies with the spot price of gold. Yeah. The spot price of gold, though, has generally tended to be towards the up direction. With exceptions, but premiums have changed, and premiums are kind of interesting. And here's something I think bears.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's break right here for another set of commercial announcements. We'll come back and talk about premiums with David Krieger on Financial Survival. Melody Cederstrom and I will be here, and we'll be right back in a moment. And please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cederstrom, and our guest is David Krieger from, I can't remember, the Hobson NBT, wholesaler for gold coins.
There you go.
One of Melody's suppliers and a friend of Melody's. Go ahead.
What I wanted to mention was an aspect of collectible coins that some people have heard about and I think applies, but it to me is important. You know, prior to 1933, gold coins in America were used to in trade with Europe. And so a lot of gold coins, 20s, 10s, and 5s, gravitated to the European countries. And for the most part, many of them waited out the confiscation that Roosevelt declared in 33 when he called back gold coins and melted them down. So those coins that were in European banks pretty much were staying there. They weren't in circulation. They weren't being used. They were just stored in the bank. And then, you know, not that long ago, really, in the whole scheme of things, some very enterprising people said, wait a minute, let's go over to Europe. Let's buy some of these coins and bring them back. Well, a number of people have done that. And that has, for the most part, populated the population of rare coins in America. They've been been brought back. They've been graded. They were in really excellent condition. They were probably sent over from a bank to a bank. In any case, they were, many of them were declared to be mint state quality coins, and that's what happened. What you were saying earlier, Al, is that the population is getting bigger, but there's another dynamic. For the most part, those coins in Europe have been taken back. The percentage that are over there are very small in relation to what was. And as a result, not only do you have a population expanding, but you have a supply from outside sources getting smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is something that a lot of people don't think about. And I think your point is very well taken.
How many foreign buyers do we have for gold and silver coins right now? And what I'm curious about in particular is whether you have any insight. I know that bullion coins are not where you want to be, or at least that's my understanding. Do you have any opinion on what the explanation is for 5 million Silver Eagles sold in a single month. Is that mom and pop here in the United States, or is that big buyers from perhaps even foreign buyers?
Well, I think there's a, I think there's three tiers to the industry. I think there are people that buy a few coins at a time. They have an interest in it. They want to hold some bullion. They want to, you know, do what Melody always says, a store of value, protection for the future. Mm-hmm. So they do that. Then there are the larger the wealthy people. I believe that there's a number of people who probably have the means and the intention of keeping a fair amount of gold in their immediate presence. In other words, safe at their home. Mm-hmm. Something happens to them, their survivor has an instant access to trading it in and getting cash. It's in many ways like having a bicycle. You know, you're obligated to report it. Whether they do or not, it's up to the individual. So there are wealthy people that have significant holdings. And then there is the third one, which is so far beyond us. I don't think we'll ever have a real full understanding. And that's huge banks buying, you know, a million gold eagles at a time. You know, and they put them in a depository, and they watch the price of gold, and when it is favorable to them, they sell. I personally believe that causes a lot of the fluctuation in the market. Mm-hmm. The second biggest fluctuation in the market, I believe, is that there are contracts, particularly in ETFs, that go out, and I think there's an argument can be made that there are more contracts traded than there's physical gold above ground, and those, you know, have an effect. But yeah. For the most part, I think, and you're wrong. I hold bullion. I don't have any problem with bullion. Yeah. I'm just not an exclusive bullion holder. I think it has a purpose. But I happen to really appreciate a coin that has a historic value and has a story behind it. I've got a little information sheet on Five Libs, for instance, and you know, it's really kind of neat. You know, it talks about the fact that a $5 gold piece was really the first one that was American currency. First one was struck in 1795. I like the story of the Variety 1, the Variety 2. I think it's interesting that they were struck at the different mints, including San Francisco, New Orleans, Carson City, Denver. There's a story with them, and it's a lot more interesting story than the bullion. Bullion is bullion. Coins are fascinating.
But you're not simply a stacker. You are a collector in the sense of being a numismatist who can appreciate the difference in quality in different coins, and you respect that difference. You can perceive that difference. A lot of us can't. Not really. I mean, I couldn't tell an MS-62 from an MS-63 if you say it's 63,
no,
I
but
guess
I bet
I'll
you
have...
could tell. I could tell you
exactly.
Could tell the difference between a
yep.
63 and a 65 in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Never looked. I just, insofar as I have any, I am more of a stacker than I am a collector. If you catch my drift, but
well, let's pursue that for a second. There's nothing wrong with being a stacker. We're all trying to accumulate the majority of gold, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. For instance, you know, let's say you bought 10 acres of land someplace and it tripled in value. You know, would you just hold it forever because it tripled in value, or would you do something with it? Some people would hold it. Maybe a sharper guy would go out there and he would either leverage it, or he would, you know, sell it, you know, take the profit, buy more, you know, whatever else. You can do that with rare coins. And I think too many people are static. And you know, they don't come back to the place they purchased it and say, "Hey, I've got these. What happens if I trade these in? What more? How can I accumulate more gold?" And I think people that purchase coins, for instance, in 1990s to the early 2000s, are sitting on some equity there that they could see some real changes. That's how you make money in the market.
Right. For a long time, David, you know, I tell my clients, you buy $20 gold, you take the profits from them, and if you want to buy bullion, you increase your ounces that
there
you're
go.
Holding. It's a plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people sometimes just go into the market. They end up just buying anything and everything. I think that's the problem with online sellers. They list 5,000 different products, and people just end up buying a little bit of this, a little bit of that, thinking that they're, you know, saving a couple pennies or a dime or a dollar, and that they're getting the best deal. And just by accumulating, you know, as much as they can, it will benefit them. But I think there's other ways that you can purchase a little more smarter. Maybe a little bit easier, and you don't need to own your own coin store.
I think that's exactly right. I have trouble adding anything to that.
You wanted to talk a little bit about legislation that's been proposed, at least, and one of the things you mentioned is that the gold coin industry is pushing for allowing certified rare coins into IRA accounts.
It is.
Significant action so far, but do you think there's going to be?
No, but I think that, you know, it used to be that you could do it, and then
you
there
could.
Were some, yeah, you could, and a lot of people really like that. But there were some excesses. It needed regulatory changes. And the regulatory change that happened in, Melody, you got to help me out. It was probably around 1990, 89, when rare coin funds actually were disbanded for IRA purposes. But the idea is really good. And if you can put the right rules in effect, I think it would be a real breath of fresh air. There's a very heavy population of people who like rare coins, and it would really be nice to be able to put that in the IRA the same way as bullion. And if that happens, it would be great. And as a result, the Political Action Committee that is common to the coin industry is pushing for it. It's part of their agenda for this year. Whether it happens or not, don't know, but it certainly would be a nice thing to do.
Wasn't the problem with the rare coins was the value? They couldn't place a value, or the value, they had a difficult time being consistent in values with rare coins?
It was, and a couple unscrupulous people who later got disciplined, were making bogus prices out of them, and it was not right. One of the byproducts of keeping long-term records of the fluctuations in the spot price and the premiums paid for coins is it gives you some kind of an indication of what is ground truth. And I think it's easy to keep something like that going, and that's what it needs. And you're right, it wasn't done right.
What's the congressional reaction to proposed gold legislation that involves gold coins? Is Congress indifferent to the subject? Are they opposed to the subject? Do they tend to be supportive?
Well, I think it varies. Like a lot of people, some people don't understand rare coins, and so there are a few senators and congressmen who are sensitive to it. As a matter of fact, there's a Senator Markey who just had breakfast with the Political Action Committee of the industry, and he is hopeful that the Senate is going to take up the Collectible Coin Act. And he's knowledgeable about it. He's been introduced around to the Political Action Committee, and the group has his support, and that's good. There probably aren't, out of the 100 senators, there's probably not more than 5 or 10 that are actually knowledgeable rare coin people to the extent that they would understand the value of having a Collectible Coin Act. Now,
Go ahead. Yeah. I was just going to say it focuses on counterfeit coins coming from overseas sources.
It does, but what it does is it updates the Hobby Act that's about 30 some years old, and the purpose of the Collectible Coin Act is to give law enforcement criminal arrest power over importers, manufacturers who would bring counterfeit coins into the country. And it also has a very big benefit to individuals. Individuals will have the right of civil action against the manufacturers and distributors of those coins, should there be any. And I think I mentioned the last time out, I mean, this is not a big problem yet. This is a proactive step on behalf of the coin industry in order to really get it in place before a problem of any serious proportions comes down and is confronted with us.
Last one that we have to possibly confront is proposals for an internet sales tax that would be that would apply to gold coins, collectible coins.
Well, not only gold coins, but almost anything. In fact, eBay has a part of their website is a suggested letter you send to your representative and senators saying don't do this, because it would require, the way the bill is proposed right now, it would require small business people, those people that have less than 50 employees, for instance, to collect sales tax or to pay sales tax to the individual state where the product is delivered. That applies to coin dealers as well as people selling, you know, bicycles on the internet. It's a bad thing. For instance, in Florida, where I'm headquartered, we have 68 counties. Of the 68 counties, they have four different levels of discretionary sales tax rates. So the basic sales tax of Florida is 6%. But if you're in one county, you have to add 0.5%. If you're in another county, you have to add 1.5%. You have to know which county that is, where your customer is located, and then you have to account for that purchase or that sale. And this is something that I think would just be absolutely adverse in the highest degree to almost any small business trying to do business on the internet. So there's a proposal out to waive requirements for businesses with 50 or less employees and those that do 10 million or less of business per year. But in the coin market, it's not uncommon to do a lot more than 10 million a year, because every product you sell, you're not selling $2.98 trinkets. You're selling valuable coins. You know, Melody's offering up coins at $625 today. You know, 10 of those is a lot. Pretty soon it adds up. So the coin dealers want to raise that limit. But that is an issue that could affect almost anybody in your audience that has a business that sells over the internet, and it's scary. And hopefully we'll get it turned off. There is a conference going on that they're really talking about to see if there's not an alternative to the internet sales tax issue. And I hope that happens, but I'm also not holding my breath on that one.
I thought I was under the impression that this also extend. Oh, I hear the music. We must be over. We must be over. Al must be out coughing. And I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thank you, David, for joining us. And we will be back tomorrow with Wednesday. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
Good night, Melody. To be a single penny left for me.